The world is visited frequently by stars come from heaven, shedding their light throughout the atmosphere of the earth and giving everyone a living helix as may be required under the conditions prevailing at that hour. This coming of the divine power under prescribed conditions and circumstances we call an incarnation or the sudden rising into action of a luminary, sometimes known as a great sage or a saint. The word incarnation suggests the coming into form, or more properly, the embodiment in flesh and blood of that which is essentially formless and capable of assuming any form. A potential which has the ability to work in any fashion whatsoever can work in a given fashion only under a given condition, as the principle of medicine is a general policy of setting right the functions of the physical organism. But this generality of medical policy does manifest itself as a specific prescription under a given condition, an analogy before us of how a formless methodology and a principle can take form for the purpose of activating energies and powers, which are exactly the things required to set in alignment those components of world conditions which have been placed out of gear, as it were, for some period, for certain reasons. In a broad sense, we may say, the powers of the world maintain themselves in a state of balance as our bodily, physical, or psychosomatic conditions try to maintain a balance, so that mostly we are healthy people, rarely we are ill. Normally we may say we maintain a balance, and that is the usual way of our conducting ourselves physically and mentally. We are not basically sick people. Basically we are healthy. Very rarely we become ill due to certain abnormal conditions arising in the system for certain specific reasons. In a similar manner, this world maintains an equilibrium of itself. It does not fall sick always. People in the world, living beings in general, are positively happy and they are not always weeping and crying, this is not the natural condition of things. But an occasional situation which may not be regarded as natural may insinuate itself into the normal conditions generally. Impelled by certain pressures into whose fundamentals we cannot enter so easily in a few minutes of discussion. It is like asking, why do we fall sick at all? This question is also the question, why should there be any trouble in the world? The reason behind the troubles and sorrows of life are also the reasons why we sometimes have physical illness. We do not have an easy answer to this question, why we fall ill, though we may have a tentative answer, such as, I went in the rain and caught a cold, I walked in the sun and had a headache, I traveled in the night and I have ache all over the body, I ate a little wrong thing yesterday and I have tummy problem. These answers may be ready-made repertory coming as an explanation of our difficulties, but these are not the whole explanation of the condition. Though these mentioned causes may be regarded as immediate propulsions for our illness, there are certain susceptibilities in our personality without which toxic matters, even when they enter our body, may not disturb us so badly. Biological science and medical people tell us that disease-producing factors are everywhere. They do not manifest themselves sometime only for our sake. They are hanging in the air even now, at all times, throughout the day and night. But we don't feel their presence because of the resistance capacity of our system. Our strength is so much, mentally and physically, that these adverse disease-producing conditions do not make themselves felt mostly by people, and they are felt acutely when there is a susceptibility of the organism, sometimes for important reasons which each one has to understand for himself or herself. Umpteen are the reasons. The conditions of life are equivalent to the conditions of our physical body. Whatever obtains to us obtains to people outside and to creation as a whole. And so, if we have to understand the world and try to find a solution for the difficulties of life, we may have to turn inward to our own selves and see what is our personal problem. How have we got into this rut of a difficulty? Who are the causes? Which are the factors? In these enterprises of ours, we may make a mistake always, because rarely do we dispassionately judge. Because of our personality always coming to the forefront and assuming an abnormal importance for itself, always, in every condition we will find we are the most important persons. Everywhere, in any condition. If you go to a hotel or a marketplace or a bus stand or a railway station, you are the most important person there. All others are secondary. This is very difficult to understand how each one thinks he is the most important person and others are secondary issues, and any kind of neglect of the requirements of a particular individual is an affront on that person on the part of others who remain there just as others and not as people like one's own self. This is the tragedy of psychological operation in human beings. So that we may say psychologically we are not in a state of universal annihilation caused by a non-alignment in our own internal psychic apparatus also, because the world of human beings is nothing but a constitution of people like me, like you, like everybody else. And many drops make the ocean. Many a non-alignment individually considered is a mass non-alignment politically, socially, or economically. We make the world, there is no world independent of us. Many people like us are the world. And whatever the world is exactly what we are. And therefore, any kind of evaluation of circumstances in life may have to start from an evaluation of one's own self, because many one's own selves make the so-called others in the world. Anyway, this is to probe a little bit into the deeper background of general issues manifesting themselves outwardly in our daily life. We are not here now to go into the cosmical conditions that may be operating behind the problems of life. The theme of our discussion now is something different, which is more practical in a way, namely our adjustment in the conditions of the world and in the conditions of our own selves in relation to divine powers that come into action whenever there is a necessity felt for such a descent, when the world finds itself in a state tending towards illness, which reveals itself as the problems of life, as we call the difficulties of people. History is supposed to be a study of the movement of human enterprises, thoughts and actions. And those who believe and feel convinced that human history is just what people do of their own accord, or what people are compelled to do by other people, may not be good students of history. Because there are independent of and different from the embodiments of human action as people, there are historical forces. A historical force is not to be confused with historical personalities. This force, which is the time spirit, we may say, is the dispensing authority behind the activities of people and the promptings of the minds of people, which incidentally become the immediate causes of historical occurrences, whatever their nature be. We are people seated here. Consider to be fairly specially blessed ones in the sense of having been endowed with a fair amount of impersonal judgment of things, which is what we mean by a person being a spiritual seeker, one who has the power to judge impersonally and dispassionately in a required measure, at least by pass mark extent at least. And we may at least console ourselves that we who are here in this hall at present have achieved at least a pass mark in this exam of being endowed with the power to judge things by not unnecessarily protruding oneself into the atmosphere of judgments and considering also other issues which are equally contributory to the coming into action of any event or experience in life. God incarnates himself in the world, says the Bhagavad Gita, whenever there is a necessity for introducing into the structure of life in the world an administrative authority which is beyond human capacity, a supernormal power is supposed to manifest itself. There are certain problems which we can ourselves independently set right. Human problems are not always entirely human. And there are certain aspects of human difficulty which may not be under the jurisdiction of human endeavor and capacity. When such difficulties arise, which are the difficulties of humanity in general, not of me or you in particular, it is not a local difficulty of a community or a family or even a country, but if general issue which torments the minds of all people so that no one can come forward as a remedying element in this condition, no one in the world can be a redeemer under such conditions. A problem which is everybody's problem cannot find a solution from any person in the world, because every person is involved in the same problem. Such difficulties sometimes arise occasionally in the march of human history. At that time it is a supernormal power finds it necessary to emerge. Such an emergence of a supernormal power is called avatara, incarnation, the coming into formation and flesh and blood and embodiment of an invisible pervading strength. Now, these events have taken place many a time in history, right from the time of creation itself. We read in scriptures, God incarnated himself. And mighty leaders were born in this world. There were leaders which shook the whole earth in the different fields of human endeavor. There were mighty political geniuses, statesmen, whom we remember even today with admiration. There were wondrous artists, painters and musicians, whom we cannot afford to forget even today. There were masters of literature in all the languages of the world, whose poetry and writing are a blessing upon the world of intellectuality even today. Many a great genius has come into this world through the process of human history, and they came for a certain purpose. The purpose being the filling up a particular lacuna in the all-round growth of the human personality, which is political security, which is aesthetic satisfaction, which is intellectual enjoyment, and so on and so forth. But the greatest need of the human being, apart from political protection, aesthetic satisfaction, intellectual necessity, etc., is spiritual protection, spiritual security. We may be growing healthily by being blessed with security politically, aesthetically, intellectually, economically, but spiritually we may be ruined. We may be rich from the point of view of dollars and pounds, but bankrupt in the spirit. Then what will happen to us? We will be adorned corpses, decorated physical frames, minus life. And you can imagine the worth and value of that physical frame. A royal personality dressed in silk and gold and silver, minus life. Such a condition the world may enter into sometimes. A decorated corpse, the world can become mightily adorned in wealth and in every conceivable physical comfort. But the soul has left. This happened many times in human history, and if we may bring the name of God into this issue, we may say God does not act always. The secondary forces of divine operation manage the issues themselves, but God may himself directly act occasionally when whole thing seems to go out of hand. Like the central authority of an administration not concerning itself always with minor issues, which can be handled by lesser power. But crisis of the whole world, which you may call a state of emergency, may call for the central authority to open its eyes and unleash all its energies. Occasionally, we have certain difficulties of this type. Those who are good students of history will know how people have lived in this world. Right from the dawn of our very knowledge of human history, it is necessary to read history. It is not an unnecessary entertainment merely. Because as I tried to point out, history is not a story of people's doings, of the coming and going of kings and the battles that they wage. Nothing of the kind is human history. Actually, a study of history is the study of the forces operating behind the events you call normally the recorded history of mankind. This requires a scientific attitude of the student, a philosophic grounding, I may say. And it is not just the story of England or India or America or any country. It is not the history of Europe or any particular country. As you read in your educational institutions, that is not history. What happens is one thing, but why it happens in that manner is more important than the knowledge of what happened. Why was that catastrophe required? This is the subject of many great students of history. Many of us do not know even the existence of such great writers of human history. we should be abreast with the conditions that are necessary to make us appreciably educated. I do not say that we can be entirely educated, whereas that is beyond us. To some measure, at least to an appreciable extent, we must be enlightened in respect of things that are at the back of the operations of things. And one of these things is the study of the powers behind human history. There was a time, right from the beginning of the 19th century, when physical science strode like a peacock and strutted with pride as the be-all and end-all of all things, and mathematics became the explanation of life. It was a eureka of humanity which began to feel very, very wrongly that it has found the solution for the difficulties of life. This was the complacence into which physical science landed itself, and it was a great joy of discovery, especially when it was coupled with an industrial revolution that took place sometime in the middle of the 19th century and the beginning of this century. And what is physical science telling us, and what is mathematics? What is the import behind industrial revolution? The world of matter, when it is fully controlled, is the solution for the problems of man. We have fast moving vehicles and mechanisms and engines which can produce rapidly commodities which will take years for us to till by plowing and working manually. And when the powers of electricity were discovered laterally, people thought they are veritably in heaven. Today, even today, at this moment, you know the suzerainty of electrical powers in the world. You cannot move an inch without the aid of an electric force. For everything, there is a need for the summoning of what you call electric energy, whatever be that operation of yours. A day may come when we may not even to swallow our food without some push button work, and that may be the apotheosis and the goal of our achievements. Today we have far more advanced in the operation of physical matter than I refer to as the middle of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. It was a time when Newton ruled the world of science. He was the god of science. Even today he is a god in some way because of his studies and researches in the fields of physical manipulation and the operations of matter. Now, the word matter is a crucial word, and that became the deity which man began to worship. Everything that you have to control and anything that is necessary for your comfort as an appurtenance coming from outside is matter, a material value. All your joy is there outside. It is in a machine, it is in an office, it is in some action which is to be performed in some place. It is somewhere outside. The feeling that all values of human life are somewhere outside the human being is the feeling of materialists. Anything that is worthwhile in life is outside you. It is not inside you, because what is inside you is the mind. And the mind it is that has to summon support from forces outside. The dependence of the human individual on forces which are outside the human individual is called the philosophy of materialism. This was highlighted almost to the breaking point at the beginning of the 20th century, when it was a very great thing to be educated along these lines. And an educated person was a past master in the knowledge of handling material power. The curriculum of study, the syllabus in schools and colleges, was framed in such a manner that it adapted itself very ably into this outlook of life, which was framed in the light of material science. And we in India are well aware of this fact. When we compare the present system of education with the minute wrote by Macaulay many, many years back, who wrote the system of education, a policy of training people, the very fundamentals of learning, on the basis of a commercial interpretation of life, which is the child of material philosophy. A commercial outlook is begot by materialistic science. So everyone who is wholly a commercial person is also a materialist. Education, which was framed under the aegis of this kind of philosophy of education, became the guiding line for the normal behavior of people in all fields of life. Man sold himself to the devil, as it were. Goethe, the great German poet, wrote an epic called The Faustus, which is the story of a person who sold himself to the devil. And you must read that epic to know the conditions under which man may be compelled to do this. There is a time in the life of a man when he would not mind bargaining with the devil and saying, "Here I am, purchase me." For a comfort and a dizzy feeling of satisfaction that comes from an atmosphere totally outside me, it is heaven selling itself to hell, telling hell, "My dear, come and possess me." I am not giving the story of something that happened in the past merely. It is something that is happening even today. We may not be under the lordship of Newton the physicist today. Macaulay is dead. And the classical materialists of science are not today so very prominently working as they did earlier. You may say there are great saints and sages and spiritual institutions. Yes, that is true. But the generality of outlook of people has not changed. Dispassionately looking and interpreting, honestly viewing things from the bottom of one's heart, the outlook in general basically of people has not changed. We may not call ourselves materialists, and none of you may think that commercial life is the whole of life. You are religious people doing prayers every day, studying scriptures and doing meditation. But it is necessary to understand what it is to be a materialist in order to know whether one is free from its clutches. A lack of confidence in powers that are not entirely outside, and a wholesale confidence in powers entirely placed outwardly in life, is a tendency to materialism. The love of money, for instance, which can make a person go giddy in the head and make a person collapse into death and coma when money in the form of gold and silver is lost. And anything associated with this kind of outlook is nothing but an apotheosis or a deification of materialism. Each one has to be a judge for one's own self. Because each man is finally a client before the Supreme Judge, the Almighty Creator. There is no proxy, no advocate here. When we are placed face to face in the court of the universal judiciary, yes, everything shall be fine. It is no use saying that. There is a heart inside our heart, and that which is within the heart will be our lawyer, who will argue dispassionately, properly, without any kind of twisting of facts. In this light viewed, we will find that much change has not taken place in the general evaluation of things in life, even after 80 years have passed. We are in the 85th year of the 20th century. But 85 years in human history is very little. Some action has been taken already by the time spirit. Because I mentioned to you that sometimes during the beginning of the 20th century or a few years before, it appeared that the world is going to the breaking point. Even as the powers of health in our body give a long rope to every one of us, and they take action only when we go to the breaking point, many of us are not aware that we are tending towards illness, because illness is felt only when it is manifest outside as a headache or a tummy pain, etc. A little tendency to inward non-alignment of the physique cannot be known unless it comes to the conscious level of our mind. And in a similar way, we may not know what work is going on in the world. You should not say so many years have passed. These so many years are only the beginning of the first step, as it were, of the working of the time spirit. The materialist forces came, as I said, to the breaking point, and anything carried to the extreme tends to the tilting of the balance to the other side. And suddenly there is a catastrophe. A world war took place, and you can imagine what kind of catastrophe it was. The abolition, annihilation of life, and placing people in utter insecurity, which one feels when the temperature of the body rises to 105 Fahrenheit, precarious, one does not know when one will be alive or dead. One may be alive, or one may not. That kind of high temperature action of the moving spirit of the world is what we call a cataclysm, a cyclone, a war, a battle, a destruction, and a sorrow, which comes in a pronounced manner and in a most unexpected fashion, which will almost break the heart of a person. You can imagine how we feel at that time when we are so bad in our health that we do not know what will happen to us. But these are the rectifying forces of nature. emerged forth at that time, great personalities. You may call them incarnations, avatar purushas. The healing spirits of mankind incarnated themselves in different parts of the world. When we speak of incarnations, generally we think of Jesus Christ, Lord Krishna, Rama, Muhammad, Guru Nanak, and these are the people who come to our mind when we think of incarnations. But a divine interference need not necessarily be in the form of these well-known personalities. It can be any event which sets right the whole situation. Sets right. And it can be any person who sees to it that things are all right. It may be a village head. Why go so far to people who are well known in history? A little person in a village who is the head of the community may be a rectifying medium for a little trouble there, and it is a divine interference. Anything that contributes to the maintenance of a balance in society or in the personality of an individual is the coming into action of God Himself. Because God is another name for the power of balance. Anything that sets a thing in a state of equilibrium is the work of God. It may be so very insignificantly manifest as not to be noticed by even the person who is benefited. Just as yesterday I was not feeling well, today I am alright. For reasons I do not know. I took rest, I feel better. What has happened to you? Something has worked. Not to the knowledge of your own self even. What do you mean by taking rest and becoming better? It is a way of saying. It is another way of accepting that a healing power has worked. And what you call rest is nothing but the working of that healing power. Introducing itself even without announcing itself to you and without even your knowledge of its having done any work at all. In this sense, whenever there is peace of mind, whenever we are healthy, whenever we feel comfortable and satisfied, we may be sure God has worked. Now such pronounced actions of God made themselves felt in human history. This was the theme with which I began. And these pronounced manifestations in human history, from our point of view at least, are the descent of great personalities. And it was my intention during these days to bestow a little thought on the role played by these masters. Who were felt as if they were touching our skin in the various parts of the world. And only if you know history very well, you can know who these persons were. They include even great generals of the army, not merely those whom you regard as holy people. Field marshals who won astounding victories also are to be taken into consideration in this assessment of the manner in which God works. God's action is pleasant and unpleasant, both. As I mentioned, to have a high fever is not a pleasant phenomenon, but it is a necessary phenomenon. And that which is necessary need not necessarily be a psychological satisfaction. A psyche which is attached to the bodily conditions of prejudice and a narrow-minded attitude to things in general. So that which is good for us is not always pleasant to us. And the good and the necessary sometimes looks like an unpleasant occurrence because of our inability to think impartially, being wedded to a total partial and individual outlook of things. So, thus came personalities of a lofty stature, right from spiritual leaders like Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, Swami Vivekananda, Swami Ramakrishna, social resuscitating powers like Raja Ramamohan Rao, and great political geniuses turned into great masters of spirit like Sri Aurobindo Ghosh. And we have Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King, and who are others you all know very well. They come and go. They come for doing a thing and do it and go. And they go in the manner it is necessary for them to go, not as we prescribe. They may go in any way. And how they have to bear this exit is left to the discretion of the great director of this drama of the cosmos. The wages will be paid according to the performance. But everybody is paid the way. And in this great saga of the coming of masters, geniuses, we have one among us whom we have seen, the great Master Swami Sivananda, whose life some of us witnessed physically, and many of you have heard and read about, whose coming has been a transforming, dramatic touch given to the life of people, which entire procedure and methodology of spiritual action can be regarded as the story of the ascent of man to God. A story which he lived in his own personality, and a story through which we have to pass, each one of us individually. A story which is also the theme of every one of the works that he wrote, which microscopically or in miniature may be said to be the story of the world in its aspiration for God. These issues shall receive our attention. Hari Om Tat Sat. Om Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti.